Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Google to you.
Google. It's the nonsense words edition of our podcast. Google to Google. You.
Oh, Google.
This is already the worst thing we've ever done.
It's a high bar. Google I.O. I watched it. You watched it. We did a little talk show thing.
We did. That was fun.
It was kind of fun. It was like a live blog, sort of, about a thing, an event we weren't at, which is also kind of fun because it becomes a little more Mystery Science Theater 3000-y at times. But
well, it's nice because you can disengage too, like, and because, you know, not to say that there isn't interesting stuff there, but when we're at an Apple event, you know, everything they talk about is potentially something that we're really tuned into. When you're at a Google event or watching a Google event and they start talking about developer stuff, I get up and refresh my cup of tea or use the restroom or whatever, because I'm not going to understand it and I really don't care that much.
Yeah, I enjoyed it because I did. So I started out, we all sort of swapped pictures. Like Mike Hurley had like two iPads and an iMac, which was kind of funny.
Mike.
I ended up, for most of the keynote, I ended up sitting at the bar in my kitchen with my iPad Pro with the video playing in picture-in-picture with the talk show app open and then occasionally flipping over to Slack or Twitter or something like that. And I wish Talk Show and Greg Noss, our friend who works at Talk Show, said that they actually had it. I think they had it in and it didn't work right, so they had to pull it out, so they're trying to fix it so they can put it back in. But that would have been nice, because then I could have been typing in little Talk Show things while I had a, you know, a Twitter stream going or something else. But but still, it was pretty great to have the little picture-in-picture thing floating in there. It was my first really extended productive use of picture in picture. I've used it for tests, and I've, you know, occasionally had like a baseball game off in the corner or something like that. But this was, you know, I'm covering this event that I'm watching in picture in picture. That was kind of fun. So
I think that would have been more useful for me if, well, A, I have a smaller iPad than you do, and B, if I weren't in a house that is full of so many other screens.
Yeah. I've got a lot of screens, like, too, but I just decided I wanted to kind of move around and have some freedom of movement rather than being parked in front of the TV, which was the other way I thought about going, which is, I think, what you did.
Yeah, I was using my... In fact, this was somewhat problematic because I tried to get the stream. So there's obviously not a Google Live broadcast app for the Apple TV. So that wasn't really an option. Trying to figure out how to get the YouTube app itself on iOS, because there was some stuff being broadcast through the YouTube app, I think, right? Or you could go to, there was a live stream at YouTube.
Yeah.
But it was not, trying to figure out how to make that work on the Apple TV app ended up being kind of a pain. So in the end, I just switched over to my Mac Mini and was using Safari on the Mac Mini, which had its own problems. I kept trying to full screen the YouTube video, and it would, something about the way that page was set up, Safari did not like it and kept shoving all the video like up off the screen, so I could only see like the bottom inch of it. And I was like, all right, I don't know what's going on there. So I eventually just, you know, left Safari in a window running on my Mac Mini on my TV, which felt like a little... Yeah, a little not the technology cutting edge there, but it worked. It was fine.
It worked. My TV has a YouTube app on it, and I think it does Chromecast. I'm not sure. So I could have probably done that. But I just decided this other thing. In fact, it was a nice warm morning yesterday, so I was going to go outside and like do it, sit outside. And I tried to like sit in the hammock and watch the Google thing. And I thought, I'm just going to pass out if I stay here in my hammock under the tree in the backyard. So I came back in and had more tea, sat at the counter. And that was better. I thought the Google stuff was interesting. Although there was a tweet that I wanted to read that I thought was really funny, but I also thought was true. And again, you can point out that major companies are playing catch up with some features and not have it be mockery. In fact, I think it's a good sign that, what are they going to do? Show pride and have a feature that their competitors do that everybody likes and just refuse to do it because they don't want to, you know, also play that game. So anyway, it's Farhad Manjoo, who writes for the New York Times, and his tweet was, everything at Google I.O. so far is, here is our answer to a rival's product. Ours is way better and will be out later this year. and you know what? That's not that far off from what I.O. was. It was a lot of stuff that was not, nobody's ever done this before, but more like, hey, you know this thing that you're familiar with from somewhere else? Well, we can use machine learning and the power of Google to make it all way better, and you'll see it later this year. I mean,
that used to be the old Microsoft dig that we used a lot of times, which was future products from Microsoft beat present products from Apple, even though future products from Microsoft don't exist yet. I think this is the way this goes, right? If you looked at, if you made a Venn diagram of all these major tech companies, they would have huge amounts of overlap, and then there'd be like little edges on each of them where they each come up, have a chance to sort of come up with a new product. But a lot of times, because we've entered this huge era of the ecosystem, really, everybody feels like they need to duplicate the features that everybody else is doing for the people in their own ecosystem. And then every once in a while, you get those outliers, those products that these companies make that end up being successful that the other companies didn't see coming. So I'm thinking of something like the Amazon Echo, right? You know, and they're like, oh, wow, this is a thing that is not, it defies any easy categorization in terms of what it does. It's not a product that they, you know, just knocked off and like, hey, this is something our competitors are doing. It's actually a new, innovative new product. And of course, now all the other companies will probably follow suit with their own versions of it. And then, you know, next year or a year, 2 years from now, one of the other companies will come up with something that nobody else is doing yet, right? And that's the way it works. Every time there's those little outside edges where somebody comes up with a new product and then everybody else rushes to compete with that product in some way. And then we wait until the cycle repeats.
Yeah, yeah. And I like to see people picking up the reins of the Echo, right? I like seeing that, or whatever metaphor you want to use it. That was probably a bad one. I like the fact that the Echo has people of
horse-drawn Echo.
They're like, they're like, hey, it's a thing. Maybe we should. Why don't we have one of those, right? And I think everybody in the tech industry is probably saying that, right? It's like, well, hey, Amazon, one of the pieces of spaghetti Amazon threw at the wall stuck. Let's investigate
that piece of spaghetti. Uh-huh. Well, and it makes more sense for Google in a lot of ways than it made for Amazon when it came out. Because I remember writing back when I first looked at the Echo a year ago and thinking, this is a weird product for Amazon to make because it doesn't quite fit within what we understand their company to do. I thought that Google or Apple would be far more likely to make such a product because they have these robust ecosystems, and Google especially, because so much of it is, you know, so much of that company is based on structured information queries, tying in with an ecosystem and possibly even like obviously data building / advertising, right? Like all of that seems to fall squarely within the kind of stuff Google does and Google does well. And that's not necessarily the case for Amazon. And in some ways, it's even less the case for Apple. Apple is, you know, obviously in terms of making like a physical widget, that makes a lot of sense for Apple. But a lot of the other things that are strengths of Google and Amazon in this department aren't really strengths of Apple, or are areas that they really need to work on. So it makes a lot of sense for Google to do something like this. And I'm intrigued to see what that actually ends up being.
My initial thought when the Echo came out was, it's interesting that this is a company that has no has no platform for voice stuff is doing this when there are two companies I can think of that have a platform and aren't. And Apple obviously hanging out there. You and I have both written numerous pieces about Siri and about the Amazon Echo and about Apple on Macworld, our columns there. So I know it'll be interesting to see if Apple goes in this direction at all. But Google's got great data and that can make for a fairly compelling product, especially when you get into having an intelligent agent. The more you're in that ecosystem and the more Google knows about you. And I know, a lot of people don't like that because that's Google's approach, is that they've got all this data in the cloud and they can kind of put it together. And that makes some people feel really uncomfortable. But there are advantages to it over the way that Apple does it, where everything is sort of just on your devices. And Google is going to take advantage of the places where their approach works better, just as Apple takes advantage of the fact that it's got a better privacy story because its approach goes that direction. But, you're making an intelligent agent. You really want it to know everything about you and be able to kind of cross-reference all of that. And that's going to be easier for Google to do. And I think it could be good, although I mentioned this in the talk show thing. I feel like everybody still way over promises for this intelligent agent stuff. And I have, because I'm old, I have Newton flashbacks, which is like, don't overpromise and underdeliver. Just don't do it. And I think with this intelligent agent stuff, that's exactly what's happening. Is there, they're talking about, like, seriously, in the same breath, Google, I forget whether that was Sundar or that was somebody else, but somebody on stage talking about this stuff basically said, now, you know, you don't want to overhype it. We got a lot going on, but here's a video about what it might be like in the future. And it's like, actually, I think you just did it. I think you just did what you said not to do, because I feel like you end up with, I was listening to Siracusa rant about this on last week's ATP, and he's exactly right, which is you end up with something that's basically like a spoken command line. You need to know exactly the way to phrase it to get it to do what you want. It's not natural. There's no context, or there's very little context. And like, so that's my concern about this stuff, is that it's getting better, but let's not overhype it, because we do judge it. It's just like if you see a video on TV, we're so trained to be connoisseurs of filmed entertainment that you can sniff out the amateurism in any video immediately. We learned this lesson when we were making videos at Macworld. And it's a little bit different if you're used to YouTube videos, but in certain professional contexts, you sniff that out really quickly. Well, this is like that, or it's like an uncanny valley thing.
Yeah, uncanny valley is exactly what I was going to say, because that's what I've been thinking about all day about this, is that it really does act like a simulacrum of a person, but not a real person, right? We were joking around during the talk show thing yesterday about how when you, it pops up those suggestions for replies, and there's like the picture of the dog, and like one of the suggestions was nice Bernese mountain dog. And we're all sitting there going like, this is not a thing that anybody actually says, right? Like yum clams. Like also, it's like you're just not quite there in understanding what a person actually sounds like. And so this is a kind of thing, you know, so Apple, you know, has started doing some of those suggested things in iOS too, right? They've got the predictive little bar at the top there in iOS that you can hit in. And what I find interesting about that is the demo they always use, which is like, you know, they use something like, oh, do you want Italian or Chinese? And like, and then they have the, you know, pops up Italian or Chinese. You don't have to type it. Great. I find that A almost never works for me. And in part because it really never comes, no one ever phrases their text that way. They're like, oh man, we could have all these different things. I don't know, like Italian, Chinese, Thai, pizza. And like all these things get listed. And at a certain point, it, you know, exceeds the bounds of what that intelligent agent is expecting. And so as a result, like, you know, I don't think I use those that much, because it doesn't end up mimicking the way actual human conversation works. And it's the same way whenever you sit down and talk with one of those automated customer service bots.
Oh my God.
Right? Like it's not, it's clearly not a human, right?
What the do way I need to type to get it?
Exactly.
Operator.
You know, and in some ways I feel like it's sad that we haven't advanced that much beyond. You go back and play with like Eliza, right? Yeah. The old psychotherapist bot. And, you know, we're not that much better at it than we were back then, I feel like. So there's promise, and this is, I think eventually this will be a thing, but right now we're in such a sort of infancy with it that it really is like, I mean, even I was going to say it's like talking to a small child, but honestly, small children have the ability to adapt and learn in a way.
Yes.
I think we used this comparison earlier on a previous show. It's like talking to a dog, right? Like a dog gets certain things, understands its name, understands certain commands that it's been trained to understand. But it doesn't really think, you know, it doesn't really formulate new ideas or understand language, really.
Right.
Like, it doesn't have a comprehension of that. And so these bots are still kind of like that. Like, they're trying their best to sort of model that. But language is really damn complicated. And, you know, we have entire human brain structures devoted to that. So it's going to be a while before we can sort of duplicate that in the technology sphere.
Yeah, it's a real challenge. God, there's so much here, because I want to talk about like the context thing, because even some of the demos they showed in their video, I felt like no, that's what Siri does, and it's the wrong approach, which is hey lady, hey computer network, or what should we say, okay Skynet, send my wife a text saying that I'm going to pick up dinner and what should we get? Okay, I'll do that. It's like, you know, that's the command line. You're like literally stretching it out. One of the challenges of this technology is to be able to do you know, hey, Skynet, I need to send a text to Lauren about dinner. Okay, what would you like me to say? Can you ask her if she wants, you know, Chinese or Italian for dinner? And then have it say, all right, I'm going to send her a message saying, would you like, you know, and rephrase it as a question instead of a command, and then get the answer back and tell me what her answer is. And it just doesn't do that. You're basically, you can give it a line or maybe two lines, because I think Siri will let you do this in a couple of steps, and it's just not the way it should be, and it's really hard to do that, but that's what you want. The other thing I wanted to mention is that the chatbot thing that you mentioned, which really bugged me, I want to be open-minded about things, but I also want to take note of my visceral reactions to things, because I think that's a consumer reaction that, you know, people will have, which is, if I'm having a text with somebody, it's a text session, and it's me and somebody else, what I want my smart computer assistant to do is assist me by suggesting things that I should do. But the way Google seems to have constituted it is like there's a third person in your conversation, which is this bot that comes in and talks to you and shows you things. And I think that's a bad idea. It reminds me of Clippy. There, I said it. Yep. You appear to be having a conversation about dinner. Would you like me to help with that? No, Clippy, go away. So I think maybe that's a little bit of a misfire where the user interfaces aren't creatures. They're tools for people to use.
Because the theory there is good, right? Because if you spend any time texting with someone and thinking, like, trying to decide where you're going to have dinner, and you need to constantly, like, okay, I need to go over to Yelp, I need to search Yelp, I need to find a place, I need to then copy that link and get it back into that same message thread, like, it is a pain. Like, that is a workflow that can be simplified. But I agree with you that the interfacer experience that you want to actually improve that is not, here is robot. Robot will solve all problems for you.
I don't want a robot. I sort of joked and said, I don't want it to. I want my phone to make me look smart. But I'm serious about that, actually, that it's like, you know, the tool should help me communicate to who I'm talking to, not, I think, this is my gut feeling anyway, there may be good arguments for the contrary, but it's like, I kind of don't want them to pop out of the UI and into the conversation in that way, a Slack bot. I mean, Slack bot, we use it, Slack bots in Slack all the time. They are punchlines or butts of jokes, and they can occasionally be useful, I'm told. Not ours.
Yeah.
And in a group dynamic, I could maybe see it. But if I'm in a personal one-on-one conversation with somebody, I don't want a robot in there. So that it's interesting. I like to see this stuff, and it's interesting to see anytime Google or Apple or Microsoft or Amazon or Facebook, a small group of companies that do things like this, you have to sit up and pay attention, because it can be. It's really interesting to see their conception of the future, but there were moments in here that I was just kind of boggled by what they were suggesting, and I'm not quite sure it made sense. But they also did FaceTime, which I actually think is really great.
Yeah, I'm feeling weird about that. So I guess I think the thing that both the messaging app and this Duo video chat app have showed me is my concern is for silos, right? Like, we have all these different technologies. We have text messaging, we have video chats, we have audio calls, etc. And my concern is that we get into a situation where, you know, there are all these different things, and either A, we're overcome by some sort of, you know, paralysis analysis where we can't decide which app we should be using to talk to someone, or B, that we end up with things that just don't really talk to each other. And so it's great that Google makes this cross-platform, but the barrier to entry still means that you've got to like, if I want to talk to my aunt who has an iPad and is not terribly technically savvy, it's far easier for me to call her on FaceTime than it is to convince her to download another app, create an account, sign in, etc.
Right?
Like, that's a barrier. And so, on the other hand, if there was a way in which these systems could talk to each other, and I could call on video chat someone on, you know, if I could essentially start what feels like a FaceTime conversation, and then it yields a like Duo call on the other end, that'd be fantastic, right? Like, and I think I made this analogy on Clockwise when we did this yesterday. No one worries about calling someone on Android from an iPhone, right? Like, if you're just using a phone number, the phone system, as dumb as it is, works great because it's actually universal, right? And that is because it's an artifact of an earlier time where this wasn't as much of a thing. But yeah, I feel like it's FaceTime, actually, I'm pretty pleased with. I use it a decent amount for family and FaceTime with my girlfriend. But it is a closed system. There's this whole long sordid history of Apple promising to open source it and that never happening, and patent disputes and all of that.
Yeah.
And so in some ways, I feel like Apple would be well served by essentially stripping it down and rebuilding it with, you know, some sort of technology. I mean, if what Google is doing here is truly open source, rebuilding it using the same technology and finding a way to make it work cross-platform. I'm not holding my breath because I'm asthmatic and that would be a problem.
Yeah, I agree. And I actually endorse that. I feel like Apple's intent originally really was to make this an open standard. And then it turns out they ran into problems and it never happened. And I think it was all about particular patents.
So it's not like FaceTime got any better either, right? Like,
no.
It's been fairly static
And Google's thing, they say it's all based on standards that it keys off phone numbers, which is actually very much like FaceTime. So I'm going to hold out a little bit of hope that at some point down the road, this will be something that's interoperable, because I feel like Apple was going in that direction anyway, and it just got stymied. And it may be able now to continue down that path and say that this stuff interoperates, because that really is where we should go. Is you should be able to put in a phone number or an email address for somebody and ring them, and it shouldn't, you know, if they were using a compatible device, and ideally should be like all devices, it should just give you voice or video with them. I think we'll probably get there at some point.
Yeah, I don't think
Apple's strategy is, no, FaceTime is only for Apple devices, because that wasn't their original strategy.
Right, and I think what's curious, I'm curious, you know, not to delve too much into the legal end of this, but I'm kind of curious to see, you know, I don't know how general those patents are that Apple got hit with, and whether or not that's something that Google might also find itself on the brunt of. Because if it's one of those super general patents about like a method of calling people using a video, then everybody's screwed.
My understanding is that it's something about one of the video codecs, like the video, like just how the reason why iOS apps don't have MP3 encoders in them right now is because there are still some Fraunhofer patents that don't expire for a couple of years, and they're all based on encoding, not decoding. So anybody can playback MP3s and it's not a problem, but encoding MP3s is a problem. It gets complicated. So yeah, it's one of those things where I think that's what happened with them, but I don't have all the details. And I'm going to take Google at their word that this is something that's unencumbered. We'll see. But I would love for them to link up, because I agree. And everybody I've talked to who's got friends who've got Android devices are like, oh, finally, this will be great. Cause Duo will be iOS. Google is, we can complain about some of the details of Google's iOS app strategy, and I will, at great length in the future. But Google makes a real effort to be on iOS as well as Android. Yeah. They want to be everywhere.
Their
ecosystem spans. And that gives them an advantage here, because Duo will let you talk to iPhones and Android phones that have Duo on them.
Right, exactly. And so that is a good thing. I mean, essentially at that point, what you've done is made a version of Skype that's easier to use, right?
Yeah.
And that's great. That's fine. No, like, I mean,
it's FaceTime, right? Because it's still it's a Duo, right? It's in the name. It's a one-on-one.
Right,
it's
right.
Not
it's not
a
multi-party,
group
which
chat,
is far more complicated, I think.
Yeah.
So presumably Google Hangouts does not go away, even though, you know, Google has had this somewhat fraught history with its communications and chatting apps, right? In almost as complicated as with its social network plays, where it keeps adding apps. And I was reading some of the comments on their blog post about introducing Allo and Duo, and someone was like, this is ridiculous. I have like four different apps, all from Google, on my phone right now, like that are all associated with different chat systems, essentially. And what the hell, right? And it's true that I think Google does have that problem, because they have GChat, which they tried to roll into Hangouts along with text messaging also into Hangouts, but there's also a separate SMS messenger app. There's Google Voice somewhere in there if you're really concerned about those things. And now we have Allo, which maybe will replace those things, but also kind of maybe not. So I think that, you know, Google is suffering a little bit from those let's keep trying this until we find something that works approach. But that's another problem with the siloing is, you know, I love iMessage on iOS. Obviously, you can't iMessage with people on other platforms. And while, you know, you can certainly default back to text messages, you lose a lot of the niceties of iMessages. And so I always find myself wondering if an, you know, an Android client for iMessage, and there have been a couple sort of workarounds. I think most recently there was an Android app that essentially uses your Mac as a relay if you are an Android user but a Mac user, which is clever, but I don't know if that actually survived or not. I assume there are other challenges. You want to maintain security, integrity, encryption, and all of that, which might be more challenging on Android. But given that Apple has made forays into making Android apps recently, such as Apple Music, I certainly don't think it's out of the question. I mean, they could also make an end run around Google and make a FaceTime app for Android, right?
Yeah.
You know, that might work, but that seems like not solving the problem. It's just doubling down on the problem.
Yeah, well, and if there's patent issues, then do they want to pay for every download of the Android
probably
version
not.
For an Android phone? And if there's,
we hope they've been working on it for years now, right? Like basically, oh, hey, we've had this, we've been working to try and make a new FaceTime for years, but I don't think any of us actually believe that.
I don't mind Allo as a table stakes of we need something like iMessage on Android. I kind of don't mind it as that. I do mind it if what it really ends up being is just we want to kill, you know, or try to kill WhatsApp and all of these other apps with a platform level version of it with the stickers and all that stuff in it, and that's a little more cynical of a play, and I'm not sure it'll actually work, but we'll see how it goes. I think I see the appeal of having Duo on the platform a little more than Allo, where it is such a me too kind of product, it strikes me. But they may just feel, I mean, Apple does this all the time, they may just feel like, look, we need to control this on our platform, we can't, you know, it's better if we, you know, have this there rather than making everybody go and find one and download it and then start using it. So I get that part of it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see how Google is. They've really made a play of, you know, we talked a little bit about their approach to iOS, and I think they've worked really hard to build this sort of like microcosm ecosystem on iOS, which is fascinating to me and has been for years. You know, you open a link in Google Docs a lot on your, you know, Google Docs, the iOS app, and it opens in like Chrome, right? Like, and you've got, in theory, if you start having Allo and Duo in the mix there, they can create their own little ecosystem, which is basically, you know, the end run around Apple won't let you choose which default apps you want to use. And so you can get by pretty well if you, you know, are sort of wholeheartedly embracing the Google ecosystem. It's a little trickier if you want to sort of mix and match between that and Apple. But I think it's smart for Google because, you know, this is their bread and butter is not Android. They don't make money off Android, right? Like,
Not really.
Yeah, they make money off advertising, and people on iOS seems like are still more likely to spend more money. So that's all upside for Google.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of Google making all of its iOS apps look like Android apps, but I'm going to save up my bile for a column down the road about that, because I think they're very bad at that, and they should be ashamed. They should feel bad. I guess we should also say, because I know a lot of people who listen to us are you know, they're dyed-in-the-wool Apple people, and they got six different colors dyed in the wool. See? And I, you know, I'm all over the ecosystems, I think. You know, I I'm always fascinated by this stuff. I use Google apps, you know. I use Google Docs, Sheets, Gmail all the time. I've got some stuff in Google Photos, but although I'm basically using iCloud photo stuff, I have a book about it, so I kind of have to, you know, live that one. But I've also got, you know, Amazon stuff, including the Echo. I've got lots of Apple stuff, obviously, because I've got so much Apple hardware. I've even got an Office 365 account, so I'm in the Microsoft ecosystem a little bit too, which means I've also got cloud storage in all those places, which is really annoying. So, I feel like for some people, what Google does is kind of irrelevant because they just say, I'm not going to use Google stuff. And fair enough, everybody gets to choose. That's great. But I do use a lot of Google stuff. So I do kind of care what they're doing. And, not just from an aspect of what's, you know, Apple's competition doing, but also from the aspect of it. I'm legitimately curious because I'm in their ecosystem. I'm not all the way in it, but I'm in it.
How can you, I mean, I guess I always feel like, how can you not use Google products, right? Like, I'm not saying, you know,
people don't.
I know. I guess I feel like if you're in the sphere we're in, right? Like, yes, okay, if you are choosing to use iOS or Android, that's one thing. If you're choosing to use a Mac or a Chromebook, whatever. But I feel like it's pretty difficult to be in the technology sphere and not use something by Google, right? Like, it may not be every day. I don't use Gmail, for example, which most people I know use, but I do use Google Calendar. You know, so I feel like I'm sure there are people who avoid it on ideological bases, just like people used to avoid any products from Microsoft. But at the same time, you know, Google makes a lot of products that are better than its competing products from Apple, right? So, or arguably better or comparable, whatever you want to say, like, you know, and so in that sense, I feel like it's impossible to live a life without experiencing some Google products. I guess some people do, but for me personally, I certainly don't issue them based on like, this is from Google, I can't use it.
Yeah, I mean, to each their own. I mean, some people really feel like, you know, we're going to get all those stories now about how the Google Home stuff is terrible because it's Google listening to you, and they're going to be able to use the microphones to spy on you. And it's like, you know, if you want to believe that, that's fine. Don't buy them. I know people who put tape over all their webcams for the same reason, right? On their computers.
Sure. Yep.
You can go way down that rabbit hole, because things can be hacked. Things can be subpoenaed. You know, when we talk about the Echo, people ask us, how do you feel about Amazon listening to everything you say? And it's like, well, if my phone is plugged in and Ahoy Telephone is turned on, it's listening. I think generally people have done the network analysis that these devices are waiting for an activation phrase, at which point they spring into action and start streaming what you're saying to their, you know, to their detection, you know, servers and doing it. You know, could that be subverted? Could it be changed? You'd see the traffic if you were monitoring or if a watchdog was monitoring it. But, you know, maybe, I mean, you can go down that hole if you want. Everybody gets to make their own decisions about it. It kind of doesn't bother me so much, but you know, I you know, everybody draws the line where they want to make it. I drew the line at like Dropcam and things like that, where I will only have them active when I'm not around. I don't like leave them right on all the time.
Yeah, sure.
Streaming video and recording video of everything I do in my house, because it's just creepy and I don't like that. But I don't care that my Xbox has a thing, because it's not, you know, it's not active as far as I can tell. And again, yes, there's a level of acceptance there that the Kinect is not spying on me.
Yeah, I mean, I have the same thing with my the Canary security camera. Yeah. I have it, that it automatically switches into privacy mode when I come home, because same thing. I don't need that. It's great. It's a useful feature when I'm away and I travel a lot.
I agree.
But yeah, I don't want that when I'm at home. And different people have different thresholds for that sort of thing, as you said. I think that's totally fine. Like, there are definitely things I'm comfortable, products I'm comfortable using, or social media even that I'm comfortable using, because I know a lot of people who are very private about their social media usage, and, you know, are very, in part of that, circumspect in what they say. Part of it is having, you know, maybe separate accounts for their personal and public lives. You know, I know people who have accounts that they are very vigilant about not even having associated with their actual name. And I had a friend recently who like shut down their entire account because somebody had linked it essentially somewhere to her name, and so created a new account. Yeah. And it's like, that's not for me, but I respect and understand that is your decision. So, you know, everybody has different thresholds on the amount of things they want to share and the information they're willing to sort of put out there and put at risk. I just, you know, yeah, for me, I happen to have, I think, a lot higher threshold than a lot of people, but
exactly.
maybe that'll kick me in the ass someday. We'll see.
Yeah, there's no wrong answer. There's no wrong answer here. Everybody has to make a personal decision about what they want to do. And depending on where you draw that line, then the differences between Apple and Google can be quite stark. And, you know, you make your decisions. I mean, I decided that the utility of having something like Amazon Echo around was worth the fact that I was going to have a device listening to everything that's said in my house, given some reassurances that it's not actually, you know, doing anything with that or sending that anywhere until you trigger it and it lights up and you can tell that it's listening to you then. But yeah, if I read a story that said that that the NSA was spying on you, or that a new update had turned it so that it's streaming audio at all times, I would have a rethink. But I made that decision, and mm-hmm. If somebody else doesn't like that and doesn't want to make that same decision, you know, more power to them. I think that everybody gets to make their own judgments about this stuff, and society over time will evolve too, where some behaviors will be seen as being unacceptable, and it's already happened, but it will continue to evolve that way. That's such as is the way of new technology. We all kind of figure it out together, and everybody does what they think feels right to them.
Yeah. Well, I know that people give me a hard time a lot for the Echo, because they feel like, oh, don't you worry about having those microphones in your house all the time? It's like, well, maybe. I don't know. Security versus convenience, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I'm not convinced it's necessarily a security risk, but at the same time, yeah, okay, there's things that could be weird and creepy happening with that, but at the same time, I want the thing.
Your Xbox has microphones and cameras. Your iPhone has microphone and camera. Your Mac has microphone and camera. There's a lot of microphones and cameras in your home. I think the always listening for the trigger word ups it a notch for some people, although that's not necessarily relevant at all.
Doesn't bother me, but because I feel like most of that, it's not like that information is getting processed by a machine. It's not like there's someone with headphones listening all the time,
exactly,
trying to figure out.
Ahoy telephone works the same way, right? On your iPhone, if you've got that turned on, depending on what model, it has to be plugged in or it doesn't have to be plugged in. It's always listening to you, but it's not. Again, it's not recording everything.
But it's
you're
a
saying.
Heck of a lot more convenient if it works when it's not plugged in. So there's your trade-off.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm glad we've solved these problems.
I am too. Well, so it's the middle of May. We got to do a Six Colors magazine in the next week.
Yeah, that should happen. Sure.
Yeah, it'll happen. If you've got suggestions for things that you'd like to see in the magazine, we do write an article every month that's sort of by request. So, you know, you can email me, jsnell@sixcolors.com, and give me your suggestions, and we'll look for this one or for the next one or other ones down the road.
I feel like we really missed the opportunity to make that a Battlestar Galactica joke and call the column "By Your Command."
Well, we could change it and do that and put a big picture of a Cylon in there if you really want to.
that won't creep our readers out at all.
And if I will also say this now, this is a new feature that I haven't talked about at great length yet, but if you go to sixcolors.com/subscribe, there's a sign-in link there now, and you can actually sign in with your account, and you can get to the archives of past Six Colors magazine issues, as well as a link to this podcast's RSS feed, which, you know, you're already listening to, so I guess you already heard it. But that's where we'll put links to subscriber benefits for subscribers, so you can log in there and actually see your special stuff on the web, which we didn't have before. So we're advancing as we go.
Enjoy.
Yes. And if you, for some reason, are listening to this and are not subscribed to Six Colors, I don't know how you found it, but please consider subscribing at that same URL, sixcolors.com/subscribe. You can sign up for $6 a month or, what a deal, $60 a year. And thanks to everybody out there. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.